Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz. Election season is heating up, and some cities and states are trying to improve the process. Governor Baker signed a bill last week adopting automatic voter registration here in Massachusetts, meaning eligible residents are simultaneously registered to vote when they get their driver's licenses or health insurance through the state. Or look north to Maine, which became the first in the nation to adopt ranked choice voting for its statewide elections, allowing voters to rank candidates from first to last when completing their ballots instead of just voting for one person. Listeners in Cambridge know what I'm talking about. But maybe it's time to go even further, completely reimagine how we vote in Massachusetts. Joining me to talk about that possibility is Aaron O'Brien, Associate Professor of Political Science at UMass Boston. Hello, Aaron.
Good to hear your voice.
Also joining me from the studios of New England Public Radio is Gerald Duquette, Associate Professor of Political Science at Central Connecticut State University. Hi, Gerald.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I hope our listeners are doing great because we're going to ask them to join us in this conversation. If you could redesign voting in Massachusetts, how would you do it? Think big. You think automatic voter registration is going to work? Want to see ranked choice voting? Something else? Something you've always fantasized would make voting better? Mm-hmm. Call us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've always wanted to say that. And you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So let's start with the smaller stuff. Aaron, automatic voter registration. This is now going to happen in Massachusetts. Is it going to make a difference?
Yes. In Massachusetts, we are hanging with states that you don't want to hang with when it comes to ease of casting a legal ballot. And what the governor signed, and obviously both chambers passed, and passed by overwhelming number with automatic voter registration, the most estimates that we could see several hundred thousand more individuals in the Commonwealth registered to vote. And as a political scientist, I think that is a fabulous thing. So Massachusetts has really moved from back of the pack to, you know, becoming more of a leader.
Gerald, you agree this is a good thing, going to help the right people, going to increase turnout?
Well, it's a good thing, and it will increase the opportunity to vote for sure.
All right. Well, let's hear Secretary of State William Galvin said about it. He was talking about how he and other advocates of the bill want to begin implementing this pretty soon, so it's in place by the time of the presidential election.
We're shooting for 2020, to have this in place for 2020, recognizing the significance of that upcoming presidential election. That will give us the opportunity to begin working in 2019 to make sure this bill reaps the fruit of the effort.
Gerald, how does automatic registration compare to something else you hear a lot about, which is same day registration? Similar kind of impact, totally different?
Well, they're designed to have a similar kind of impact. The point is to allow folks who only become aware of an election very late in the process to be able to vote, right? So if you aren't paying attention because the election is right after you get back from your summer vacation, if it's automatic voter registration, you're already registered. If it is same day, you can show up at that September 4th primary, having only realized there was an election a week ago.
If you don't know till the last minute. I should say again to listeners, call us. Tell us how you would fix voting, get more people to vote, or less people to vote, or make it easier. 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. So another possibility then. Let's go from the, hey, we already did it, to the, hey, they did it in Maine issue. Aaron, ranked choice voting. Can you start by explaining how that works?
Sure, it's actually pretty easy. Say there's, like in the Suffolk County DA race, what, there's five or six individuals running. What you do is you rank one through five, your choices for candidates. And if the winner gets 50% on the first count, then she or he wins. But if no one reaches 50%, they go to whoever came in last and redistribute those votes. So the first choice votes that went to the candidate with the least amount of support will get redistributed to those voters' second choice. So what it does is the zero-sum game of voting. Like if you were, if you voted for you were a Bernie supporter, but you didn't want to vote for Hillary, you could put Bernie first, Hillary second, and Trump third. And so even though you might not have gotten what you wanted with ranked choice voting, you're at least going to get your second choice. So it's a better barometer of voters' interest, their true preferences. And a lot of voters go in now and hold their nose when they pick between a Republican and Democrat. With ranked choice voting, they can put who they truly want first and then second, third, and fourth. So we find that voters tend to have they voice a better experience with voting when ranked choice is there.
So, and Gerald, yeah. Do you get the sense that voters understand that process, could be taught, could be educated to understand the process and how they think about how many people they vote for and how they rank them?
Well, if we can get Aaron O'Brien on the radio more often, then there'd be no problem. Yes, I don't think that voters have a difficult time understanding how to do it. I want to point out, though, that we were just talking about automatic voter registration. That's really about making voting easier. Ranked choice voting is about making it more precise or more accurate, a more accurate reflection of the voter's actual intentions or interests. So there's a slightly more sophisticated purpose behind ranked choice voting, which so, I bring that up only because in Massachusetts, the thing that we were able to do was sort of one of the lower level make voting easier things, automatic voter registration. Ranked choice voting would be a much more challenging reform to get passed in Massachusetts.
And so you're saying it actually has a different purpose, too. Now, we could, in theory, am I right about this, use ranked choice voting to do away with districts and do statewide ranked choice voting, say, for the House of Representatives? I'll ask Aaron this.
I mean, it could be done.
Because then you do away with sort of gerrymandering, other problems like that.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I think that's harder to do in the sense like, you know, like for, are you going to rank your top 40 state Senate picks? I can't name all 40 and it's my job to know that. So I think it is possible, but it makes a lot more sense at the town, city, locality level than trying to do it statewide when you need to fill a chamber, a state Senate, or a state legislature.
All right, well, let's go to a listener because we've got somebody with a big idea. It's Miguel from the Mass Pike.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Basically,
no, it's great to
have you. I think voting should be mandatory. I think democracy is something as Americans that we cherish, and voting should be part of our duty. In this way, it would avoid just the extreme showing up at the ballot.
So everybody must vote or else what?
Well, other countries, like, for example, Brazil imposed a fine. If you don't show up to vote, there's a fine. Or there is, I think we could think of ideas that are related to when you're getting your driver's license or so on that have to do when you have to renew documentation that you should be at least registered to vote and show up to vote.
That's great. Gerald, what do you think of mandatory voting?
Well, I mean, it's very tempting, right? And especially for those of us who are trying to understand what the people, you know, want, and that having them, you know, requiring them to show up could be useful from our perspective. But obviously, it's a difficult thing in a country where we think of ourselves as having all these rights to do what we want to do to say you have to do this. But you could do it in a promotional way. I mean, you could have mandatory voting that you are rewarded for rather than punished for not doing, right? A tax break or something of that nature could be
a day off from work.
Right.
Or day off from work.
I say to my students all the time, we have to pay taxes. I don't have to register to pay my taxes. Right. So it's not, you know, we mandate things quite regularly. It feels a little weird to say you have to vote. But as the caller said, many countries do this. They also provide a day off from work for it. And so it's not as outlandish when we really start to think how many things government actually mandates that we do.
So, Aaron, do we know if it works? Other countries do it. Do they get 100% turnout?
They don't get 100% turnout, but it depends on the country, obviously. But it's usually between 80 and upwards of 90%. So it's quite reflective of the population.
But 80 or 90%, yeah. That would be a huge increase on turnout in a lot of U.S. elections.
It would be amazing. I mean, we make it really hard to vote in the United States, which there's a lot of ironies in that.
Right.
All right. Let's go to another call. This is Christine from Malden. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So one of my issues is the accessibility, particularly for people who work 40 hours a week and are paid by the hour. Why are we only voting on one day a week? Why aren't we voting on 3 days? Why aren't we voting on a Saturday and a Sunday and a Monday so that people can work out their religious issues, their work issues, their family issues, and still be able to vote?
Great. So you have a couple of, I mean, we vote on this Tuesday in the middle of the week, and you're saying it could be a couple of days, could be a weekend. Gerald, do you change in the date? Well,
there's two ways to look at that. We can sort of just look at it in a functional way. Hey, wouldn't it be more efficient? Wouldn't it be better? Wouldn't more people have an opportunity to vote if we expanded the time you can vote? Or we can sort of look at it in terms of power politics, right? Why do we only vote on one day on Tuesday? Why is it so inconvenient? Well, obviously, the people who are winning in the current system have no incentive to change the status quo. So in some respect, whenever you run up against election laws that seem somewhat less than optimal, you have to admit that maintaining the status quo is pretty important for those for whom the system works currently.
So, I mean, that brings up a good point, because these are not just theoretical considerations, right? These are political considerations. There is some group of people, some constituency who might favor change and some constituency who favors the status quo. Aaron, is there a constituency for better access to the polls?
Well, a lot of good government groups, you know, Common Cause, League of Women Voters, and anybody who's ever held their nose when they had to vote in election. Like, I think for many voters, not all, choosing between Trump and Hillary Clinton wasn't their dream date candidates. So I think anybody who's been dissatisfied with the lack of ways for third party candidates to win are folks that favor change. And I actually think, you know, automatic voter registration getting passed, we were talking about, that is a really big deal, because now elected officers or elected officials in Massachusetts, their constituency just changed pretty dramatically. So it is a big deal that it got through the House and the Senate and Baker signed, because I've had many politicians to say to me off the record, they don't want to make it easier to vote because they're winning in the existing system. And so as much as people hate each other politically,
people say that to
now,
you direct, openly, avowedly?
Oh, yeah. No, I was on a panel, and the guy right next to me, I mean, he was honest. He was evil, but honest.
Let me just say for listeners who still want to join us, the number is 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. With your suggestions, reasonable or crazy, we take them all, for how to improve voting in Massachusetts.
Evan, one of the tricky things about whether there's a constituency for reform is when you are reforming processes, that's a somewhat inside baseball endeavor. And the average voter doesn't really pay much attention to process. So there's definitely a constituency. The question is there a sufficiently potent constituency? Is there a constituency that can actually turn around and energize enough voters so that you have to listen to that constituency? In other words, because it's a process issue and not sort of a direct interest of the voter issue, it's harder to break through.
And in Maine, right, the reason that constituency came together for ranked choice voting was because a lot of voters were unsatisfied with the results of, with the election of a governor who wasn't enjoying majority support, correct?
Right. That's exactly right.
So that outcome makes a big difference. Let me throw out another one. Vote by mail. Is there good evidence about vote by mail?
We differentiate between convenience voting things. That's a convenience voting measure. It makes it easier for people to vote. And what we find with most of those measures, things like, you know, voting on weekends, early voting, convenience voting measures do increase turnout. More people vote as a result. But the socioeconomic bias between voters and non-voters remains with convenience voting. When you do measures that change registration, meaning everyone's registered, automatic voter registration, or you eliminate some of the registration barriers, you do same-day registration, those things both increase turnout and lessen, never end, but lessen socioeconomic bias in turnout between higher income and lower income. So those two sets of reforms have differential effects. They always affect turnout up, but they don't always cut into class bias.
Interesting. Let's take another call. This time, Maxwell from Franklin. How you doing, Max? Well, I shouldn't assume. How you doing, Maxwell?
Good. So my question is, you know, right now we have a representative democracy where every representative has one vote. What if we had a delegative democracy where we can delegate our vote to a representative so all the representatives have different votes based on how many people they represent?
Interesting. Gerald, what do you think?
I'm just trying to figure out exactly what that means. So if I represent, 100,000 people, I have to figure out what the majority of them wanted and vote that way? Is that what he's suggesting?
Oh, Maxwell, can you clarify on that?
It'll be a direct democracy, but you can sort of delegate your votes to different people. So if you want to sort of hire someone to be your vote for you on Beacon Hill, you could give your vote to that person, and that way...
Oh, you mean for representatives to be able to vote by proxy?
Right.
Okay, that's like, I mean, so you're just saying that now you're talking about making it easier for actual elected officials to actually vote in the chamber.
No, I think so. We can move on. My sense of this is that he's saying actually everybody gets votes on every issue, and then they just hand those votes over to representatives. Like every bill that comes up, every person gets a vote.
I mean, yeah, that's
and
pretty
then,
much what I.
Yeah.
I think the answer is no.
No is the answer.
Aaron's answer that. All right.
Just because our biggest problem is getting people to vote. I mean, I love the caller because the caller obviously has a lot of policy interest and could do this. But it would require so much attention from mass publics that maybe it could work in a smaller town or something like that. But I don't think you could scale that up.
So I wanted to get back just for a second to what Aaron was talking about in terms of how different approaches sometimes increase turnout but don't reduce disparities in voting across class lines. Should that be a fundamental interest in any voting reform? And what is the best approach to that if we want to sort of equalize access across class lines?
Registration. Liz Rigby, and she's at George Washington, she's done this empirical work. But if you can get one magic bullet reform, so you can only get one, and you want to lessen socioeconomic bias and turnout, same-day registration, that's the single best reform. But to your question, I think it's political. I, Erin O'Brien, does think that if we mitigate class bias, we know that when participation is more equal amongst low- and high-income people, social welfare policy is better, there's more expanded social services, and there's more investment in infrastructure. But there are others, not named Erin O'Brien, who argue, listen, if you get to the polls, it's your job to get there or not. Class bias is a reflection of lack of interest.
Mitigating class bias is a perfectly reasonable choice.
It's a political question.
Right. In other words, if that's something you believe ought to be done, then you can advocate for it in the political arena, which includes advocating for changing the way we run elections.
All right. We've got another call. Aaron from North Andover has a theory for what's really wrong with voting. Aaron, are you there?
Yes. Hello. I'm here. I hear in the conversation about improving access to get voters to the polls, but nothing on, I guess, what you'd call the supply side, the supply of candidates. It's very hard for, say, minor parties to get ballot access and maintain it. I think that would improve a lot of voter interest if there were a broader variation of opinion on the candidate side.
All right, so maybe the problem isn't access to the polls, it's the candidates. You can think of this in a couple of ways. It could be that we're not getting the candidates we want, need, deserve, or it could be that people don't know enough about the candidates. Gerald, what do you think about the supply side
theory? I mean, the logic of what the caller's saying is perfect in the sense that, yes, there certainly are voters who would like more choices. I'm not so sure that the average voter necessarily, when push comes to shove, is going to use the increased choices in a way that the caller imagines they would use them. In other words, it makes perfect sense to say that if we only have a couple of people and, you know, we only have chocolate and vanilla, but I'm a real, you know, fan of strawberry, I should have a chance to choose strawberry. That's all very logical. But one of the points of representative democracy is to create institutional intermediaries between the voters and governing. And elections, obviously, are conducted so that so institutions can provide sort of a vetting process and a rationalizing process to sort of transfer translate the will, the raw will of the people into some rational alternatives. And so whenever you start to talk about reforms to expand the opportunities to run for office, that's fine, as long as you understand that the average voter doesn't actually put a great deal of intellectual effort into studying candidates and issues.
Aaron?
Well, but it is a bit of a chicken and egg question, right? In the American system, Democrats and Republicans control the game. And if you're not into Democrats or Republicans that much, it's rational to tune them out. And so something like ranked choice does make it easier for candidates to break in, candidates that don't have the party backing or would rather run as a Green or some other party.
Well, so, guys, it has been a pleasure to talk to you and listen to you argue. That's the whole point of this. Aaron O'Brien, Associate Professor of Political Science at UMass Boston, and Gerald Duquette, Associate Professor of Political Science at Central Connecticut State University. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Zoe Mitchell. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive director is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Evan Horowitz. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.